The Tom Woods Show, episode 2175.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Before we jump into our topic for today, I want to remind you, if you're not following the Soho Forum, the great, great libertarian debate series in New York City, they are having a debate coming up August 15th, 2022. The resolution is, climate science compels us to make large and rapid reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. They've got Andrew Dessler arguing in the affirmative, Stephen Koonin arguing for the negative. Check it out, thesohoforum.org. And if you don't live in the city, you can also purchase a live stream ticket that will allow you to enjoy the debate and also support the important work of the Soho Forum. So check out thesohoforum.org. This is not an ad paid for by the Soho Forum. This is me helping out a friend, Gene Epstein, get some people over there. So thesohoforum.org, August 15th is their next debate. Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about taxes and how to, let's say, minimize your exposure to them, particularly on the business side. We're going to talk to Matthew Cercely, who is a tax advisor. And in fact, that very term is something we're going to talk about in just a minute. So Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Really glad to be here.
You know, an agorist tax advisor. I don't know about that. But on the other hand, we need somebody to navigate us through this awful thicket of tyranny. And it might as well be somebody who's on our side and who really knows the stuff and who's sympathetic with us. I mean, in fact, who would you want more for a tax advisor, now that I think about it, right? Than somebody who is going to search far and wide to help you. So explain yourself, though, Matthew. Explain this term you've applied to yourself as an agorist tax advisor. So, by the way, first of all, let's not assume that everybody knows what that word means, by the way. Let's start there.
So agorist is a word that, at least as I use it, it is similar to just saying you're free market. You're all about the markets. There's definitely a bit of a implication for an agorist that you don't mind being in a gray or even a black market, but that just markets solve lots of problems and letting the market work allows more to get done better. I know there's a lot of agorists who say, oh, if you pay taxes, you're not really an agorist because that's part of the state. And what I figure is, you know, if you don't want to pay any taxes, that's illegal. I don't really care. But my life is a lot easier when I pay some taxes than trying to pay no taxes at all. So I want to help everybody pay as little taxes as possible without getting in a whole lot of trouble with the department of making you sad.
I hear you. Now, when you use the term tax advisor, does that have a particular meaning as opposed to an accountant? Does that have to do with the background that you have professionally?
It doesn't. It's a way of trying to explain what I do. So I am actually a practicing attorney. I am not an accountant. And either an attorney or an accountant can be a tax advisor, but they don't have to be. And so as a tax advisor or sometimes a tax consultant, I work with clients today to set up their company, to set up their business, sometimes to set up their life, where when they pay the taxes on the income they earn, they pay less. So most accountants, basically you bring them the numbers and they do the math and they say, you owe this. If you have a really good accountant, they'll at least say, well, if you had done this differently last year, you would have saved money. Maybe do that in the future. So I'm much more proactive. But I don't call myself a tax attorney because most of the people who are tax attorneys are the people who are like suing the IRS or the defending people if you're having trouble with the IRS. And that's also not what I do.
Okay. So I was thinking at one point of bringing somebody on to my School of Life program who's a tax expert and giving kind of general advice to people, just telling them about things that they might not know about. Deductions they can take, or, you know, there's something where you can hire your children to work for you for like $12,000 a year and you can write that off, you know, for each child, stuff like that. And by the way, nothing we say in this episode should be construed as tax advice. Consult your blah, 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 whatever the thing is I'm supposed to say. But what he said was that he felt that tax advice is so individualized that he wasn't sure he could say a whole lot that could be generalized to a heterogeneous group. Do you think that's right?
I think that's right, and I think it's wrong. I think there are many things that may work for 90% of people that will blow up in the other 10% of the people's face. And so I think, just as Tom said, and I'm going to be a little more serious, before you do anything I talk about, talk to an attorney or an accountant, because just because it works for most people, it doesn't mean it will work for you. I think, though, there's a lot of benefit in both explaining general rules, you know, this works for most people, this works for some people. And if nothing else, not only will they maybe investigate that, but if they figure out, oh, it doesn't work, well, maybe they'll figure out what works for them instead. So I think it's a good starting point, if nothing else, as long as, again, just dear listener, please be very careful because you don't want to mess this up.
Okay. Now, let me ask you something. I get this a lot. There'll be people who, let's say, they sell some things online. Maybe they have like an eBay-based business. I know somebody who goes to stores, buys inexpensive products, and then resells them on eBay for three times as much, especially seasonal stuff like Halloween, stuff like that. I would hate this business. I would hate to have my garage full of stuff like that. But people do run businesses like that, or they run purely online businesses. They sell digital stuff, or they're doing e-commerce. And they'll ask me, should I, quote, incorporate? Like, should I create a, quote, unquote, company? Or should I just do this as an individual? Does that matter from a legal or a tax standpoint, whether or not they officially create a company?
It does and it doesn't. The best lawyer answer ever, right? It depends. There's really two different questions in there. An entity can affect what's called asset protection. It can mean if somebody sues you over something, it might protect you and your personal assets from getting sued. So there are lots of reasons that have nothing to do with taxes where you might want to have an LLC or a corporation. Similarly, especially for a side hustle, oftentimes a sole proprietorship is the most advantageous way to be taxed. And so there's no need to incorporate or form an LLC for some people with some businesses. I like LLCs from a tax standpoint a lot because as an LLC, you can actually pick how you're taxed. So you can be a single member LLC and you can say, tax me like I'm a sole proprietor or tax me like I'm a C corporation or an S corporation. And you can even change that year to year so that every single year you can make sure you're getting the maximum benefit. Although you unfortunately have to change it at the beginning of the year. So there's a bit of a guessing involved. So there's no legal need to set up a company. And in fact, I tell most people, if you're starting a business, start your business, make some money, and then worry about this stuff. You know, once you're making $1,000, $2,000, now worry about that. But go make the money first, because that's the hard part.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's say a guy like me. Now, I have a couple of companies that are organized as LLCs. And then I have the Tom Woods Show. And the Tom Woods Show generates income in various ways. But for a long time, I just, you know, I just took the checks. You know, that was it. I just deposited them into my account. Was there any tax benefit to me if I had made it into the Tom Woods Show Inc. or something along those lines?
Especially starting out, I suspect, and not having seen your tax returns, I don't know, of course, but I suspect that if you had been an S Corp, especially early on, you would have saved a lot of payroll tax. That's the really nasty thing for a self-employed person is suddenly you are paying that 15.3% payroll tax on, as a sole proprietor, every dollar you earn. As an S Corp, there are ways to only pay it on part of what you earn. And so, you know, that can very quickly be a substantial savings on your taxes. Now, at some point, you make so much money that trick doesn't actually work, which is another reason why, again, you know, I say, be careful what you do, because if you are an S Corp and you're making $500,000 a year, you may actually raise your taxes instead of lower them.
Let's talk about what are some simple things that a business, let's say, can do to save money on taxes. Are there things that they can do that you can generalize to the general run of businesses?
So the number one thing is just keep track of your expenses. It is so easy to spend money on the company, especially in a small company, and you lose the receipt or you lose the email. And now without that, you don't get to deduct it because a credit card receipt is not sufficient. Another thing I love to do is any sort of educational programs are usually a tax deduction for a business. And there are lots of ways to, you know, maybe I want to go to Las Vegas. So I find a conference that has something to do with my business. I sign up for the conference, I go to the conference, and now that whole trip can be a business deduction for me. And so the government's now paying, you know, 22, 24, 32% of your business trip for you. And that works for essentially any profitable business. It's not going to work if you're, you know, losing money. And it's not going to work if you, you know, probably do it every other week. But it's a great thing that almost every company can do, at least some of.
Okay. Now, I know there are, I don't know if you've ever seen that Seinfeld episode where Kramer and Jerry are talking about businesses writing things off. Have you seen that?
I'm not a Seinfeld fan, unfortunately.
Okay. Kramer has no idea what it means when a business writes something off. He says to Jerry, oh, they just write that stuff off. And Jerry says, do you know what it means when a business writes something off? Like, he just thinks that means they don't have to pay for it or something. That's what writing it off means. So a very funny exchange ensues. So I'm thinking about the case of if I'm out for dinner and I am legitimately talking business the whole dinner, and then the check comes. It's really okay for me to save that and write that off as a business expense? I mean, that's legit?
That is almost always legitimate. And in fact, you don't have to spend the whole time talking business. You know, it's very reasonable if you say, I don't know, you're having a meal with Michael Malice and you're talking about your various things together. Well, no one expects anybody at a business meal to spend the whole time talking business. I mean, I've been at lots of business lunches where I've been pitched by people and, you know, you talk about each other's families, you talk about your hobbies. So that's absolutely, for most businesses, again, in most cases, something you can do. Now, the normal rules are you only get to write off half of the cost of the meal, not the full meal, but there are ways around that as well.
Huh. Okay. You must see a lot of people making the same mistakes over and over again, I assume, right? Because I was, just to give an analogy, we had an air conditioning problem the other day, and we have a neighborhood guy, thank goodness, who just comes over immediately if you have an air conditioning problem. And I thought to myself, I bet it's the same three problems, every single air conditioning system that he comes to repair. I bet it's the same three. And he walks through the door thinking, which of the three is it going to be? Now, it may be a little bit more complicated when we're dealing with the U.S. tax code, but nevertheless, I bet you see a lot of the same blunders. If so, what would they be?
Well, the biggest blunder is doing something and then calling your tax advisor or accountant and asking what's going to happen. So for example, I see a lot of people recently who have sold real estate and made a whole lot of money on it. Well, if you structure that deal correctly, whether it's your home or an investment property, there are lots of ways to either avoid or at least temporarily avoid paying the capital gains taxes. But the second you sell the property, it's too late for me to do anything to help you. Similarly, not so much this year, obviously, but last year I had lots of people calling me selling crypto and making, in some cases, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then saying, what can I do to save on taxes? And usually the answer is, well, you called me a week ago, and we talk about how to do this right. Relatedly, just not thinking about taxes at all. You know, running your business, and then, you know, March comes around next year, and you say, oh, I got to pay taxes. I wonder what I should be doing. Because frankly, in my experience, the reason most successful businesses end up failing is they don't set aside enough to pay the taxes they're going to owe. And then when they have that tax bill, it's really, really bad.
Yeah. So I assume this, of course, is why we got withholding for individuals, because the same problem would be replicated across the entire country when everybody gets a giant tax bill. So they want to make it convenient and easy for everybody by just yanking it out of your check before you even see it. What about, I mean, businesses are, you know, of course, make the world go round, but how about individuals? Do you advise businesses only, or do you also advise individuals?
I almost exclusively work with people with businesses.
Okay.
When I do that, I will absolutely look at what can they do in their individual life to save money. But the fact of the matter is, if you're a W-2 employee especially, there is so little that can be done to change what taxes you're owed. It almost doesn't even matter. I mean, it's, you know, put the money in a 401k, put it into an IRA. Again, I have worked with one person who was just selling their personal residence. They wanted to make sure they did it right tax-wise. And that's actually incredibly simple when it's a personal residence. So I think I charged them $100, basically de minimis. But no, I kind of go where I can do the most good. And where I can do the most good is particularly small businesses. You know, if it's a side hustle, making 10, 15, 20 grand a year at least. If it's your full-time job, making at least $50,000 to $60,000 a year. And that's when I can start to really do a lot to help people out.
Okay. I know this is a dumb question. I know I probably already know the answer, but the situation with Bitcoin and capital gains taxes. Now, that's not necessarily a business question, but you know, a lot of businesses have Bitcoin. Capital gains taxes, are they assessed according to your income? Like the more income you have, the higher a capital gains tax you pay on a capital gain, first of all?
So there's short-term capital gains and long-term capital gains. If you buy something and then sell it in less than a year, your capital gains rate is the same as your ordinary income. If you have it for over a year, it is based on your income. But for 90% of people or more, it's 15% flat rate.
Okay. What's the highest it can be? Do you know?
For long-term gains, it can be 20%, but then there is one of those riders as part of one of the Medicare things that I believe can add, I think it's 3.6% on top of that for people who make a lot of money. So it's basically 24% is the highest long-term rate currently in 2022.
So I buy Bitcoin at X dollars. Remember the old days when it would consistently go up? Now, I mean, I understand how it works and, you know, the long run, it'll probably be fine. But let's imagine it goes up. As long as I don't sell it, let's say, I don't sell the Bitcoin, then I just sit on it and there's no tax event, quote unquote, that has occurred. But if I do sell it and let's say, you know, I bring in 20 grand more than I paid for it, that 20 grand is then subject to capital gains taxation. Unless I'm misunderstanding it, I think that's how it works.
That's exactly how it works. And you use the magical word, which is taxable event. So there's lots of things you can do that will cause taxes to be owed. The most obvious one is if you sell it for dollars, but if you sell Bitcoin for Ethereum, the IRS also says that's a taxable event. If you know you were to go and buy a computer and pay with Bitcoin, that's a taxable event for you. So you would owe the gain on it at that point. Pretty much anytime you transfer it to anybody else other than as a gift, it's going to be a taxable event. And the nastiest one is if you have a corporation or an entity taxed as a corporation, and if it gives you the Bitcoin, that's a taxable event. So that doesn't apply to sole proprietorships, but it does apply to corporations, and I've seen it cause problems.
Okay. And I read, this might be out of date by now, but I read something, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago, where the IRS is always saying it's going to crack down on X or Y. And I don't know if that's a bluff. I don't know if they have the manpower to crack down on X or Y. But I remember them saying that people are just ignoring this Bitcoin capital gains thing and they're going to crack down on it. That's not something I really want to go toe-to-toe with them on. So it helps that I just buy and hold. So it's not really an issue for me. But if it were, you know, in a pinch, let's say I had some financial emergency and I had no choice but to liquidate it into US dollars. That's a really, really irritating thing. And I guess, I don't know if the only hope, I'm not asking you to be a political prognosticator here, but the only hope I have for this is that enough US congressmen come to hold Bitcoin that eventually they realize it's in their interest to get rid of this classification of Bitcoin so that we don't have to pay these taxes.
Yeah, I doubt that's ever going to happen just because even the congressmen and women who have it, it's going to be such a huge income to the government, and there probably will be ways they get around it. I doubt it's going to happen. But no, and there really is, other than, you know, finding some individual who's going to pay you cash, there's no way to hide it. You know, if you go to Coinbase and you sell 20 grand of Bitcoin for dollars, they're going to tell the federal government you did that, the same as a bank is going to tell them if you deposit $10,000 in cash. And so that's where most of the crackdown happened. And they tried to go and to Coinbase particularly, and they said, give us all the records of all our US customers. And Coinbase went to a federal judge and said, we shouldn't have to do this. And the judge agreed. So the IRS then said, fine, give us all your records of anybody who did, I think it was over $10,000 net transactions in the year. And the federal judge said, oh yeah, that's fine.
Jeez. All right. I didn't know about that one. If you don't have your Bitcoin on, and look, we're not advocating, you know, we're not saying you shouldn't do what they say, whatever like that. I'm just curious. If you don't have your Bitcoin on an exchange, does that make it harder for them? Or is there still some way? Because I'm sorry, I don't understand it well enough.
So it absolutely makes it harder for them, but it's also harder for you to turn it into anything other than other cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, right.
So,
right.
You know, again, if you're trying to sell $100 in Bitcoin, there's lots of people who will just hand you a $100 bill for some Bitcoin being sent to
you. Right, yeah.
But if you're trying to liquidate $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, you basically have to go through an exchange, or you're going to, you know, get a lot less than you should have probably. Because, I mean, again, who has 20 or 30 grand lying around to buy your Bitcoin? And even if they do, why wouldn't they go buy it from Coinbase themselves?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. You know, I'm thinking of an analogy here. Let's think about somebody who is in a court case, wants to get the best lawyer he can, because he's seen on television that the best lawyer, for some reason, is able to take some guy who's obviously guilty and can sometimes, you know, get a not guilty verdict. For some reason, the best lawyer is really, really a lot better than the worst lawyer. There's a huge, huge difference. And so a lot of people are willing to pay a premium to get the very, very best lawyer. Now, on the other hand, you know, if in broad daylight, you robbed a bank and there are 100 witnesses, and then you confess that you robbed the bank, there's only so much that any lawyer can do for you in that situation. But we all know that there is a difference. You all want to get the best lawyer you can get. Well, likewise, with a tax advisor, you would think it would be similar, that I want the most expensive, high-powered one there is. But I just wonder, are there enough ways to minimize your taxes that there really is that much of a difference between the very best tax advisor and the very worst? Or is it that once you get to a certain level of knowledge, all the tax advisors are pretty much the same?
That's a complicated question. I would say it depends a lot more on how much money you're making than how good the tax advisor is at some level. Because anybody making 50, 60 grand a year in a, you know, solopreneur business, any tax advisor they work with will probably get them within 3-4% of the same results. If you're making $10 million a year, frankly, I've never worked with anybody making that much money. There are probably things I don't know. And so going to somebody who maybe even specializes in much bigger companies would make sense. It's not necessarily even that they're better than I am, because they might not be able to help somebody making $50,000 a year. It's just a different skill set as people make more money.
Okay, fair enough. What are the different types of taxation for companies, and is there a best one?
So I've already kind of mentioned this. There are four ways companies are taxed. Actually, it can be a sole proprietorship or a partnership, and either of those can be with or without an entity.
Yeah, I guess, okay, actually, let me stop here. I guess what I meant to say was, how would somebody choose between them when they don't really know anything? They just know they need to do something. I mean, there obviously are different advantages to different types of companies, and maybe tax advantage isn't the only thing you're thinking about. So how do you assess all the variables?
Well, and if you don't know anything, you're not going to be able to. So you either need to figure it out yourself, or you need to hire somebody. If you don't choose what type of taxes you're paying, then there are rules that determine it. So if you don't do anything and you're a single guy with a business, you're a sole proprietorship automatically. If you create an LLC and you're the only member, you're also taxed as a sole proprietorship unless you file a form with the IRS saying, I want to be taxed this way instead. Or again, starting out, you haven't made any money, or you've made $5,000 or $10,000, a sole proprietorship is absolutely fine. But there's lots of things to look at. For most people with a side hustle, there are some really great tax savings to being a sole proprietor. Versus if you're making $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year in a service business of some sort, you almost certainly want to be an S corp for taxation instead of a sole proprietorship. Some of it also depends on, I have one client who made a whole lot of money 1 year, and we actually split his company into two separate companies. So he had an LLC and a corporation, and the LLC, it made sense to tax it as a sole proprietorship, and the corporation, it actually made sense to tax it as what's called a C corporation, because that has a flat tax of 21%, as opposed to him having to pay, you know, 35% on his income taxes.
Okay. I'm trying to think about this whole tax advisor thing. If I have a tax advisor who's an attorney instead of an accountant, are there particular advantages that gives me? Is there any advantages to having to going to an accountant instead for questions like this?
So the main advantage for an accountant, well, there's two. One, an attorney is licensed in certain states. So any attorney can probably give you federal tax advice. But for example, I'm only licensed in Texas. So if you want to know about your Wisconsin taxes, I can't help you. An accountant generally can give you tax advice for any or every state. The other benefit is most accountants who are tax advisors will also do your taxes. And I currently don't actually do anyone's taxes. The major advantage for an attorney, especially for those who maybe want to play it a little riskier with what they're paying, is there's attorney-client privilege. So if you discuss with your accountant, hey, I'm thinking about maybe not paying all my taxes, there's no privilege. And if the IRS investigates that and there's a note in your accountant's file, they'll find that. As an attorney, well, there's privilege. They don't get to see my file. So it remains hidden, and barring incredibly limited circumstances that mostly require somebody being an idiot and waiving privilege, anything you discuss with your attorney or your potential attorney is covered by attorney-client privilege, is inadmissible, cannot be discovered by the IRS.
That makes sense. Okay. So for this Texas thing, does that mean of people listening right now who say, I might want to talk to this guy, do they all have to be in Texas?
Absolutely not. Again, most of my work is avoiding federal taxation. I've had clients in many other states. Some of those are states that they don't have income taxation, similar to Texas. Some are, you know, again, they're paying so much in federal taxes, they're not really worried about their state taxes. I can certainly do a little bit more to help somebody in Texas, especially since there can be some business taxes in Texas. But I have clients in Tennessee, I have clients in Missouri, I have clients in Kentucky, in Florida, in Nevada, probably 20 states at this point, even New York and New Jersey.
Okay. So let's suppose somebody says, well, I would like to talk to a tax person who shares my values, because that's really important when talking about taxes. How would they reach you?
Well, the best way is I set up a special page on my webpage, agoristtaxadvice.com/woods, that will redirect to a Calendly link that will let anybody set up a free 15-minute consultation. Basically, you know, we check, can I help you? Do you want to hire me? And then we move forward from there.
Okay, so let's get that link. So agoristtaxadvice.com, and it's /woods in particular.
Yes.
Now, why is there a /woods at the end there, Matthew?
Because that tells me exactly where people came from. So I know that there are Tom's with listener, and there's also going to be a discount if you end up hiring me through that link.
Well, look at Woods always getting something for his folks. Okay, so Agorist Tax Advice, so A-G-O-R-I-S-T, taxadvice.com/woods. Of course, I'll also have that link on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/2175. Did we miss anything? Is there anything else we need to cover?
I just wanted to cover, you know, some people are like, why do you limit yourself saying you're the Agorist Tax Advisor? Why don't you say something else? And it's because, frankly, I hate dealing with cowards. When I started my company, I didn't really have a brand going. And I had some clients who are like, oh, I want to save money, but I don't want to do anything that's not 100% approved by the IRS. And the fact of the matter is, about 80% of the tax code is a gray area. So if you want to stay 100% in the, I know this is acceptable, you are overpaying what you owe. And I just got tired of dealing with cowards. And I figure anybody who's willing to hire the Agorist Tax Advisor is somebody who, you know, you're not going to be stupid. You're not going to try to say, I'm not paying any taxes at all. But you're at least willing to approach taxation with a risk-reward benefit analysis of, well, you know, this is probably okay. Let's do it. That's probably not okay. Let's not do it. Those are the people I like to work with.
Okay. Well, agoristtaxadvice.com/woods. I'm wondering if I should use that. /woods, right? It's got my name on it. I will consider that. So agoristtaxadvice.com/woods is where you all should go. Again, I'll have it up at tomwoods.com/2175. And Matthew, I appreciate your time. Best of luck.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for today. Tomorrow, if you can believe it, our friend Germinal G. Van has another book out, book number 24. And this one has to do with poverty and inequality. So we'll have a lot of fun talking to him about those topics tomorrow. So if you like and appreciate the old Tom Woods Show, I got a lot of goodies for you as a supporter over at supportinglisteners.com. So go check that out, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.